The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with a Business Journal special report headline, Small Business, Big Mission, SWOT, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, Threats. As small businesses continue to pivot from their business models to lessen the negative impact of the pandemic, owners and managers voice optimism about the future. And the special report begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, SWOT, S-W-O-T, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, Threats. The SWOT analysis is nothing new for anyone familiar with business school dogma, though its application to the Triangle's small business community as it rebounds from the pandemic is probably a first. What follows is Triangle Business Journal's breakdown of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats working for or against the region's small business owners as they climb back from one of the most disruptive events in modern times. From the editor, recovery begins, but it will take time. Written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief, Triangle Business Journal. By the time I finished writing this column and you read this, another 20 million Americans will be vaccinated. And ever so deliberately, we are getting to a 50% vaccination rate among the total population. And that is creating an urgency among the business community to get things started. But the recovery will not come all at once. Too much has changed since March 2020 for us to think that all businesses will be fine. They will not. When Governor Roy Cooper gingerly approving the opening of restaurants and bars in our state, the hospitality business has begun to recover. Erica Wells' piece on salt seafood reflects the environment for almost all eateries across the region. But to do a SWOT, strength, weakness, opportunity, and threat analysis a year after the shutdown of our economy may be a bit risky. We knew that the forced work-from-home culture would affect several industries across the board, from hotels to gas stations to boutiques and other businesses that rely on a consumer's disposable income. The U.S. savings rate has skyrocketed in the past year. Bloomberg estimates that all the money the U.S. saved in the past year would result in 9% GDP growth rather than the 4.6% currently projected for 2021. If those savings go unspent, the economy will grow just 2.2%. According to research from the National Bureau of Economic Research, recipients of the initial $2.2 trillion in stimulus checks were saving their stimulus money or paying down debt, and only a small percentage of those surveyed actually spent that money. NBER found that 33% of the roughly 12,000 individuals queried said they saved the payments, while 52% paid down debt. Now, add another $1,400 per person into the mix, and while you may not see all of that money go into buying things, a portion of it will hit retail stores, gas stations, hotels, airlines, and restaurants, etc. Some businesses, however, did not have to wait for the recovery. Reporter Caleb Harshberger notes how remodelers such as Raleigh's Distinctive Remodeling found the pandemic to be a strength as work from home forced all of us to change our home layout to accommodate work and keep it separate from our personal space. But as my colleague David Pertell points out, not all businesses have been affected equally. Russell's Pharmacy and Shop of Durham, like most retailers, lost the foot traffic it relies on to grow its business. The owners say just when things were starting to look up a year ago, the pandemic hit and everything became dark and ominous. Russell's Pharmacy has survived the hardest part of the course. Now, the owners hope the retail sector weakness will turn into a strength as those disposable dollars start seeping back into the economy. As I said, it is all about making that dollar go from hand to hand. We're not there yet, but we are hopefully, finally. But we are hopeful, finally. And the first article, Bound by Strength, written by Caleb Harshberger. For the last 32 years, distinctive remodeling founder Eddie Cassonave has weathered financial ups and downs, fluctuating consumer trends, and more. And in 2020, his firm faced its latest challenge with the advent of COVID-19. The pandemic put a halt to projects, ending some altogether. But after a few months, some unexpected benefits came to light as homeowners around the region began reinvesting in their homes amid lockdowns and remote working trends. And that itself is the strength of Cassonave's business. Cassonave entered the world of remodeling over 3 decades ago while still in college. He studied engineering at NC State University and was looking for a way to pay for classes. He began a small company building decks when he wasn't in class and soon began growing it as he went. Cassonave has grown his business into a full-service remodeling firm, launching Distinctive Remodeling in 2002 with John Rufty before acquiring full ownership of the company. And despite the downturn of 2008, Cassonave has since been growing the firm again, adding staff and subsidiaries, including one set to launch later this year. Distinctive Remodeling started its 2020 strong. Since the recession, the company had built its staff count to 20 employees and was set to bring in $4.2 million in revenue for the year. Then came the pandemic. Customers hit the brakes on planned projects, wiping out nearly $1 million in revenue in an instant. "We had 2 large projects, one on hold and one that went away," Cassonave says. "That left us about $1 million shy of the revenue goals of the year." Meanwhile, the company scrambled to get COVID precautions and safety measures in place so the staff could continue working on the project that remained. Ultimately, no one lost their job at Distinctive Remodeling, and no one contracted the virus. Cassonave praises the work of the Home Builders Association for its efforts in working with state and local governments to allow companies in the industry to continue operations. "That could have made or broken the whole shebang," he says. "I know there were other states that were not so fortunate and had a lot of people sitting at home that didn't really need to be." The challenges of the pandemic have also yielded some unexpected benefits. By the summer, the demand for housing roared back amid low interest rates and changing needs, and with it, the business for remodeling. Homeowners wanted to make their homes more amenable for day-to-day live and work activities. This has seen those that can afford it are increasingly looking to renovate their homes with additional space or reworking existing space. "The job sizes are getting bigger," Cassonave says. "We've seen a run of on places for people to work from home or to teach kids at home. The dip made people think they'd be staying in their own homes for a while. There was a dip in home sales, and then that took off like a rocket, and remodeling took off as well." Despite this surge in interest, challenges still remain, with one of the largest being supply chain issues. Since March, material costs have climbed and manufacturers have struggled to keep up with demand from builders after the pandemic and ensuing shutdown slowed operations. In the face of restricted supply, prices have shot up and delivery delays have become more common. "Prices have gone crazy," he says. "We've had customers we've worked with looking at projects a year and a half ago, and now they say we're ready, but the price has increased so much they really weren't ready. They'd have been better going ahead back then." Looking ahead, he says, "We've got a lot of jobs coming out of the design process and into production now. We do expect 2021 to be a good year." A Sudden Pivot, written by David Pertell. One of the biggest blows the pandemic delivered was to brick-and-mortar retail businesses, those local shops that rely heavily on foot traffic, which all but vanished in the early months of the outbreak, leading to countless small business closing. The situation has forced local retailers to find new ways to attract customers to survive. And for a brick-and-mortar retail pharmacy, it's all about getting people in the door. And a young pharmacy in Durham is finding there is more than one way to make that happen in a pandemic. Russell's Pharmacy and Shop on Anger Road in East Durham, in just its 3rd year of existence, is the lifelong dream of Darius Russell, who runs the business with his wife of nearly a quarter century, Terencia. Russell's opened in November 2018 and was still searching for consistent growth when the pandemic struck a year ago, and the Russells had to scramble to stay afloat. When the pandemic first hit, Russell's Pharmacy and Shop saw sales shoot up as people scrambled to stock up. But then business fell off, and the pharmacy, still working to make a name for itself in the community, saw business slide down over the spring months. "Seems like things were plateauing," Darius Russell says. "I really feel like we were going to start excelling exponentially, right about the time the pandemic was when we expected to start growing exponentially. Business ticked up through the summer and into the second half of 2020 as people ventured out more and more. Still increasing a little, but not at what I thought it would be in year two. Seems like we're still in year one, Russell says about the business performance in 2020. The pharmacy received a loan during the first round of the Paycheck Protection Program. It was approved for a $22,000 loan, according to data from the U.S. Small Business Administration, but it didn't qualify for a second loan because its revenue did not fall off significantly. But if that had happened, the business would most likely have shut down, Russell says. We're not losing patients, but we're not increasing as much, he says. What the business, with five employees, needs is exposure, Russell says. And in recent weeks, a big lift in that area has happened. Russell's pharmacy is now offering COVID-19 vaccinations, and it's getting allotments of 100 doses per week of the Moderna vaccine. That's bringing people to the business, Russell says, which means more opportunities for sales and new patients for the pharmacy, which has filled more than 13,000 prescriptions since the business opened. It's getting more people in the door, many who have driven by many times but haven't noticed us, Russell says about vaccinations. At the beginning of March, the pharmacy was offering them 4 days a week, giving between 10 and 30 shots each day. Things are starting to rev up now, he says, adding they plan to keep doing vaccinations for the duration of the pandemic. His biggest concern is the potential risk for variants of the virus to cause a spike in cases, forcing a new round of shutdowns. The pharmacy also started offering delivery service last year, doing anywhere from 25 to 30 deliveries per week. It's helped attract new clients, Russell says. I feel like this is a need we're able to meet. We can help the community get back on its feet, he says. The Taste Whisperer, story by Erica Wells. Serving up fresh seafood at a time when the coronavirus brought the restaurant industry to a halt has been a test of resilience for a Durham chef. Saltbox Seafood Joint owner Ricky Moore says he made a very manageable pivot last March by focusing on takeout orders. Like many in the restaurant business, Moore saw an opportunity, and it worked. It doesn't mean that I'm back where I need to be. It means I've seen a progressive increase in traffic and sales, somewhere between 25 and 35%, Moore says. Moore, who has 30 years of experience, was determined to keep his doors open no matter what. Moore serves his signature fried dishes at his original spot on Mangum Street in Old Five Points, which opened in 2012, and his second place on Durham Chapel Hill Boulevard in Rockwood, which opened in 2017. I feel like we had to adjust, but we were not going to close because if we did, it would have been harder to reopen, Moore says. As long as I had a stove, fire, and pots and pans, I was going to cook something. I looked at all the other business concepts in different categories, and they were still servicing consumers. So I said, if they can do it, then we're going to do it. A year later, Moore says business has improved as people have adapted to the changes that restaurants have made to continue operating. My staff and I took that energy and said, let's make sure we do everything we can to make our consumers comfortable when they come here, he says. Also, let's be really creative. For example, in February, the restaurant featured specials inspired by African American culture for Black History Month. Before the pandemic, Saltbox Seafood Joint had 13 employees. Moore made 8 layoffs, but he eventually brought back 3 people. Moore focused on paying his employees with the $55,000 loan he obtained through the Paycheck Protection Program. Also, the restaurant was selected to receive a $25,000 award from Discover's Eat It Forward program last summer. The credit card brand provided a total of $5 million in an effort to help Black-owned restaurants. Still, Moore has had to deal with supply chain issues. His menu is locally sourced from North Carolina fishermen. It has been hard for me to get what I need from them because they also have had challenges because of COVID, like losing crew members, on top of seasonal limitations, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, Moore says. There were still some folks out there fishing, but it wasn't as bountiful as it used to be. Luckily, some had done a lot of fishing beforehand, put up fish, and preserved it. During the toughest parts of the pandemic, he shrank his menu from 40 to 60%. He even created and sold TV dinner-style meals that could be reheated without losing quality and participated in a government-funded meal program through Schools for Families. The restaurant's survival has boiled down to his determination and creativity and community support. We are in a position of progressive growth, Moore says. We are not where we used to be, but I've seen some increases. Revenues are still fluctuating, but I'm able to sustain and give my employees full-time hours each week. Meanwhile, the Culinary Institute of America graduate and military veteran says he sticks by the motto, tough times don't last, tough people do. If you're able to keep going, you need to figure out how to do it, Moore says. This pandemic has been a new challenge, but restaurant owners have had to become more skillful. I've become a better leader and problem solver. Software's Hard Push, written by Lauren Onasorge. Teradota was founded 20 years ago by former CEO Brandon Lee and Garrett Christian, chief strategy officer. But little did the founders and the current management staff know that its software could come under a severe business model threat as the college admission process has been turned on its head because of the pandemic. Lee and Christian were technology coordinators at UNC Chapel Hill, whose job it was to assist professors and graduate students in implementing technology in the classroom. But behind every threat lies an opportunity. Teradota announced on October 2nd, 2019, that Anthony Rotoli had been named CEO and that Lee would transition to chairman of the board of directors. Teradota thought it had the perfect person in Rotoli to expand its travel abroad options and international experiences. After all, he'd spent decades leading companies in the tech and higher ed spaces. Rotoli says the company actually is finding opportunities emerging from the pandemic. Teradota delivers international education solutions, and when study abroad tanked last year amid rising global COVID-19 case counts, it definitely gave him pause. The company, in the midst of a hiring spree, had gambled heavily on growth, investing in both a new headquarters and a new CEO, and suddenly study abroad programs were at a standstill. So Rotoli, then barely 5 months into the job, says the firm needed to pivot. That meant reimagining global engagement to include things such as virtual options and enhanced safety protocols. That allowed American students to opt for virtual experiences, joining cultural events online, and across the pond, international students could connect with U.S. universities without leaving their home countries. But it took a dedicated scramble to create those options. When the pandemic struck, Rotoli suddenly found himself leading a company that had to roll out entirely new software products to meet the demand shift. The software started as a way to further assist universities in managing study abroad programs and suddenly started getting more play outside of the education space. We were kind of staying in front of everything going on, Rotoli says. Because we stay pretty strategic in front, we started to see some opportunity for us as a business where we could help our institutions come out of this on the other side. And he says he sees the firm continuing along that path, even as it will keep supporting study abroad on the other side of the pandemic. Rotoli says the company also saw the shift as an opportunity to expand virtual learning options for historically disadvantaged populations who, due to financial reasons, had never been able to travel and participate in study abroad. It's broadened our reach into the customer base, into the higher education space, he says. Rotoli declines to give financials, but says the company had double-digit growth over the past year. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing series, The Promise Of. Places to Just Be You in Durham. Dorian Bolden's vision for Bayou Cafe, that's spelled B-E-Y-U, Cafe C-A-F-F-E, has grown from one coffee shop into a bigger concept that gives back to the Bull City. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 acres and a mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. If you know anything about Dorian Bolden, you know he's all about community. Building community is the essence of his flagship Bayou Cafe in downtown Durham. His passion for his alumni community at Duke University led to the creation of Bayou Blue Coffee on campus, and he's bringing Bayou's hip, vibrant coffee culture to Research Triangle Park with the upcoming location in Boxyard RTP, a mixed-use development built using shipping containers slated to open in late May, with more Triangle coffee spots to follow. And sharing that sense of community took on an even greater role in 2020 when the Bayou Food Project launched in order to address growing issues of food insecurity amid the pandemic. What you may not know is that Bolden really didn't even like coffee, not in his early years. In fact, he didn't become an acquired taste for it until his senior year at Duke, when he started adding coffee to cream and sugar to get through the long study nights. Now he's the quintessential coffee connoisseur, and he's excited about the potential for Bayou's new e-commerce site and its opportunities to extend the company's reach. "We're focused on e-commerce and expanding our digital footprint," Bolden says. "We are solidifying partnerships to push that out. It's going well in terms of new subscribers. We're seeing a nice conversion rate every day, and I'm pleasantly surprised that our local brand is reaching out across the country." Since launching in November, the e-commerce site has produced about 10% of the company's revenue. He projects e-commerce will be 20 to 25% of sales this year. But he chooses not to disclose the actual revenue numbers, except to say that company sales perked up 5% in 2020. "We're solidifying our competitive strategy and how we will bring it all together under the Bayou brand," he says. E-commerce shoppers can place a single order for Bayou coffee or subscribe for a recurring shipment of coffee every 4 weeks. During the pandemic, Bolden seized the opportunity to connect with customers virtually. "We've been doing Facebook Live classes and helping everyone learn how to up their coffee game," he says, adding that the company hired an intern to craft videos and better utilize the digital market. "It's all part of elevating the Bayou Coffee brand to a new level of corporate maturity. What started in 2008 with Bolden's Heart and Soul signature coffee blend, followed soon after by the 2009 opening of the first cafe, and in 2016 the $1.2 million relocation to their spot on West Main Street in Durham, is stepping up to a bigger presence across the Triangle and beyond. It's a good time to look at growth," Bolden says. "I go back to my economic background," referencing his Duke degree and early career on Wall Street. "It's about supply and demand. There was a saturation in this market pre-COVID, so there will likely be a market correction. There are good opportunities in the marketplace, and we are exploring other sites within the Triangle." In addition to the Bayou Cafe that is opening at Boxyard RTP, Bolden hopes to open a fourth Triangle location by the end of the year. The company is bringing on a vice president of operations to help support the growth in e-commerce and to free Bolden's time to identify the best locations for expansion. Morgan Weston, director of marketing and communications for Boxyard RTP, says the development is targeting a late spring, early summer opening. As an indoor-outdoor venue, she notes there is ample space where visitors can socially distance, and despite the ongoing work-from-home status for many RTP offices, the outlook for Boxyard's opening is optimistic. "We're planning a robust schedule of an on-site programming each week, including live music, movie nights, trivia competitions, and a running club," Weston says. A Triangle pop-up market is tentatively scheduled for June 19th at Boxyard RTP. While Bolden is excited about e-commerce and expansion and pleased with the growth in sales, what he has become most passionate about is the work of the Bayou Food Project. "COVID has opened my eyes and all of our hearts," he says. "A few of us, six or eight, started in April as the DURM project, working to feed frontline responders. From there, it grew into the Bayou Food Project, successfully providing more than 225,000 meals to children, families, essential health care workers, and teachers, while helping to sustain employment for food service workers. We've been able to work with nonprofits and the county to raise funds. This wasn't profit-generating, but we were able to break even and still provide livable wages," he says. To date, the initiative has raised more than $125,000 and provided more than $124,300 in gross wages. Although pay cuts and some furloughs were necessary early on, EIDL and Paycheck Protection Program loans enabled Bayou to bring back all employees and provide livable incomes. The initiative grew out of a passion to tackle the problems of food insecurity, but Bolden is even more evangelical about how to address problems going forward. "The deeper problem is how to tackle poverty. We talk about food insecurity, but businesses play a huge role in not paying a livable wage for employees. At our company, we had already decided that we're not going to just try paying livable wages. We're going to fully adopt it. And we're in talks with Durham Tech to coordinate a workforce development program," he says. I'm really excited about providing community meals and how the workforce development business model can work, but my dream is that we can connect with foundations and nonprofits that are serious about tackling food insecurity, that we find those who have financial capital and are willing to give money to build a sustainable model that can fix this problem. The most advantageous aspect of having a financial background, Bolden notes, is that he knows how to maximize every dollar. My background is economics and sociology, a perfect combination for what I'm doing, Bolden says. When I look at how we are strategically positioning the company, we have the due diligence to work with investors to make sure we're protecting their interests. Understanding realistic returns and assessing risks is very beneficial when we negotiate strategic partnerships. Another highlight of 2020 was Bayou's first leadership retreat held in the mountains in July. It was a great moment for me as a business owner. We redefined our core values and mission and realized we have really begun to move the company forward, he says. And there are also a couple of news articles in the Promise Up section. Raleigh HR firm expands D&I offerings. Diversity and HR Solutions has expanded its services to include diversity placement services dedicated to recruitment of women and minority candidates to fill C-suite, senior, and mid-level executive roles. After spending more than two decades working to create diverse and inclusive workplaces, I believe that it is time to extend that diversity to boardrooms and executive suites, said Gracie Johnson Lopez, president and principal consultant of Diversity and HR Solutions. Noting the marketplace gaps that persist in diverse hiring practices, Johnson Lopez said the new venture continues her commitment to create company cultures that value diversity, equity, and belonging. Throughout her career, she has noted a direct line between diversity and inclusion and an organization's performance. Past clients have included Duke University, McDonald's, and Red Hat. The company's virtual Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Conference is scheduled for August 5th and is projected to draw 600 attendees. Durham's Bright Black awarded $20,000 grant. Tiffany Griffin, co-founder of Durham-based Bright Black, is the recipient of a $20,000 grant from Third Love, one of the largest e-commerce intimate apparel brands in the U.S. Griffin is the second recipient of the Online Retailers Incubator Program. The TL Effect, which was created to support early-stage consumer-focused companies led by women of color, Bright Black is a candle brand that boasts custom fragrances and handcrafted candles to share positive narratives about blackness. Bright Black has a unique market proposition of driving change through the use of scent as a medium. Heidi Zack, CEO and co-founder of Third Love, said, "We were captivated by the brand and their products and look forward to supporting the company on their business journey." As a part of the incubator's grant and in collaboration with Felicis Ventures, Bright Black will be amplified through marketing and public relations. The program also offers mentorship from the Third Love team. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Need a realtor? They're available. The low number of homes on the market and a high number of realtors is leading to intense competition in the Triangle as consumers try to take advantage of low interest rates and buy. In Wake County, there were 1,123 active listings in February 2021 compared to 3,298 in February 2020. And despite the low numbers, there are plenty of realtors. The Wall Street Journal recently noted that in January, there were 1.04 million U.S. homes for sale, down 26% from the previous year. But the National Association of Realtors had a whopping 1.45 million realtors, up 4.8% from the previous year. That's also true in the Triangle. Andrew Sims, CEO of the Raleigh Regional Association of Retailers, notes that the Triangle Multiple Listing Service has 13,600 subscribers, mostly realtors, and about 4,300 listings. But he says that's a bit deceptive. At any given time, only about a third of those are full-time realtors, with others doing it part-time or in addition to another career. And interest in becoming a realtor tends to rise in tough economic times, as people in sales and similar fields transition to new careers. Regardless, this is one of the hottest markets in the Triangle in recent memory. Millennials ready to buy their first home are butting into investors who can put more cash down, all contributing to an intense experience. Buyers are exhausted, Sim says. They're exhausted from every listing in a certain price range being between 60 and 70 offers, and many of them sight unseen. Epic Games raises even more cash. One might have thought Cary-based Epic Games would be content with its cash status after closing on a $1.78 billion raise last year. Apparently not. Britain Sky News reported on March 22 that the video game developer is looking to raise another $1 billion, bringing the Fortnite maker's valuation to a stunning $28 billion. It was valued at $17.3 billion after the 2020 raise. Epic Games declined to comment on the report. The latest news continues a streak of headlines the company has been making since last year. In July, it was revealed that entertainment giant Sony had grabbed a $250 million stake in Epic. Then in August came news about the $1.73 billion raise, which included the Sony cash. Entrepreneurs are on the rise in NC. The pandemic forced many in business to pivot, and North Carolinians did so in a big way. According to business application data from the U.S. Census Bureau, people in this state submitted 93.8% more new business applications in January 2021 than January 2020. Across the United States, business applications jumped 72.9% in January from the previous year, according to the Census Bureau. West Raleigh looks to make a vital step forward. A reimagined West Raleigh is moving closer to fruition, with the state planning a new headquarters for the Department of Health and Human Services on Blue Ridge Road. The Blue Ridge Corridor has been a mishmash for years, with key facilities such as PNC Arena and NC Museum of Art sharing the space with low-slung state properties. But dramatic changes coming with Bandwidth building its new headquarters in the area, and the state ready to revamp the properties it owns. On March 23, the NC Department of Administration held a virtual town hall to discuss plans to take zoning from 3 to 5 stories to 12 at the site for the new HQ across from the Art Museum. That opens up all sorts of mixed-use opportunities on Blue Ridge Road, which would enhance the region and help spark the growth imagined when PNC Arena opened in 1999. It eventually means workers and Wolfpack and Hurricanes fans could walk out and enjoy restaurants, bars, and amenities, finally. Chatham Park now coming together. The developers behind Pittsburgh's Chatham Park development have brought on a Raleigh brokerage firm to handle leasing and land brokerage at two of the park's burgeoning districts as activity ramps up. Mosaic developer Leemore Capital and Chatham Park developer Preston Development tapped Lee & Associates to head up leasing at the 44-acre commercial district Mosaic and land brokerage at the 92-acre Northwood Landing. The first building is set to open at Mosaic in May. Moss Withers, CEO and president of Lee & Associates Raleigh-Durham, notes new businesses have grabbed 60% of the available space. Altogether, that part of the park will feature 750,000 square feet of retail, restaurant, office, medical service, and educational space for lease. And finally, in a section called She Said It, a quote from Gina Lofton, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft U.S., speaking at a virtual crowd at the North Carolina Technology Association's Diversity and Inclusion event on March 24. If you feel like your voice is being marginalized, I invite you to be able to feel courageous and brave enough to address that yourself, but if you don't, get help. Those of us who see it, I want us to lean into our responsibility for not staying silent. It is incumbent upon us as leaders to address that situation and not remain silent. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Aviation page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Big lift for a small town. How Holly Springs beat out Texas for 725 jobs. Holly Springs is a small town, but it just won a huge manufacturing facility that's expected to create hundreds of jobs as part of an investment that could reach $2 billion. Public records provided by the North Carolina Department of Commerce show what it took for that small town to beat the Lone Star State for Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies' planned 725-job expansion and it wasn't dollars. The state of Texas, where Fujifilm Diosynth's Morrisville-based U.S. operation has a location, offered up an incentives package valued at more than $300 million, records show. Its package included free land, infrastructure, and property tax abatements. It's a package that, at least dollars-wise, North Carolina couldn't match. Altogether, including a nearly $20 million job development investment grant, training support, and Department of Transportation dollars, North Carolina offered about $33.5 million. Additionally, Wake County and Holly Springs stepped up with an incentives worth more than $90 million combined. Fujifilm Diosynth Technology CEO Martin Meeson says there were several factors in North Carolina's favor, including the actual site in Holly Springs. The site itself was very well suited to what we wanted to do, he says. Expedience was a major factor, too. Fujifilm is on a timetable to have the facilities completed by 2025, and its local and state partners were clear that they could make that happen, Meeson says. This is a big investment, and we wanted to make sure we made the right decision. It's that spirit of partnership, and we've got that there, he says. Meeson says the firm is already starting to hire for the project. Now that people know where the location is, we can start to recruit in earnest, he says. RDU traffic still down in January. COVID-19 is still stifling demand at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. According to numbers released at RDU's March board meeting, a little more than 300,000 flyers traveled through the airport in February, down 69% from February 2020. March, however, is predicted to be the airport's biggest month since the onset of the pandemic, with 470,000 passengers projected to fly. Prion CEO says exit is not inconceivable. Weeks into the launch of its first commercial product, Raleigh-based Prion is ready to scale. Could a big exit be in its future? CEO Igor Jablokov says it's not inconceivable. Prion is the brainchild of serial entrepreneur Jablokov and launched its first product earlier this year, an AI platform that enhances chatbots and help desks. The pandemic is creating more use for the technology. And in a section called Luring Talent, why tech entrepreneurs aren't worried about Google taking their employees. Some fear Google's Durham expansion will tighten the talent pool for tech jobs. But who isn't worried? The entrepreneurs behind many of those local firms. James Avery, CEO of Durham advertising technology firm Kevel. People want to go work at Google aren't often the people who want to work at a scaling company. Brian Balberni, CEO of Raleigh's Issuer Direct. If anything, I think it draws more interest in the area for qualified candidates moving to the Triangle. And Ryan Carfley, CEO of Personify, a Raleigh recruiting agency. Them coming here is going to do nothing but bolster what is already a very, very strong market for tech talent. And finally, in a section called He Said It, a quote from Wes Harper, a three-time survivalist on Discovery's Naked and Afraid and co-founder of Carrie's Lightwire. It takes a lot of mental fortitude to start a business, grow a business, go through some very rough times, troubling economies, and so on. And that's a lot like this show. You have to have the mindset that you are going to do this. You are going to make it. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Nightdale market heats up. New York firm plots major residential mixed-use project. A New York-based developer with a growing footprint in the Triangle has plans for a 76-acre mixed-use residential project in Nightdale. Earlier this month, KDM Development of Pittsford, New York, filed a rezoning request with the town to allow for the development of its proposed Smithfield mixed-use planned unit development, calling for 141 single-family detached homes and townhouses, 348 apartments, and 15,000 square feet of retail space. The project is situated at the corner of Smithfield and Mailman Roads, just north of Interstate 87. The land is currently undeveloped and owned by a collection of companies and families. We started working on this a little over a year ago, says Kenyon Burnham, Vice President at KDM Development. We think it's a nice opportunity to bring a mixed-use community by downtown Nightdale and provide some retail and apartments. KDM Development estimates the total cost of the development will be between $65 and $75 million. Homes will include 65 townhomes, 39 single-family lots 60 feet in width, and 37 single-family lots 80 feet in width, according to filings. The company plans to sell the lots to Dan Ryan Builders to construct. The apartment portion of the project will feature 9 multifamily structures, including 2 mixed-use buildings, altogether totaling 168 one-bedroom units, 132 two-bedroom units, and 48 three-bedroom units. The mixed-use buildings will be 3 stories tall, and the apartment buildings will be 4 stories. Burnham says the retail portion will likely be a mix of shops and restaurants, though the company is likely to favor restaurants. KDM began meeting with the town last spring and held a neighborhood meeting in which 6 residents attended, asking about traffic and potential infrastructure improvements and raising concerns about the development's density and the number of units proposed. Burnham says the company hopes to have rezoning approval later this spring and to start site work after that. If approved, and assuming it takes 6 to 9 months to prepare the site, construction is expected to begin in early to mid-2022. The mixed-use buildings would be built first, followed by the apartments. Work begins on redevelopment of Durham Warehouse. Washington, D.C.-based Ackridge and Boston-based Alcyon Ventures have begun work on 949 Washington, redeveloping the decades-old Brain Building into a life sciences and creative office property as builders around the region scramble to keep up with demand in the sector. The building, which dates back to the 1950s, features 37,500 square feet of space and includes second-story loft space. The site is situated on a little over 1 acre at 949 Washington Street, adjacent to the Duke Beltline Bike Trail and east of the Pearl Mill Preserve. 3 firms vying for mixed-use project. The Garner Town Council went over the 3 proposals vying for the town's downtown opportunity site recently and gave initial feedback to town staff. The applicants include Baltimore-based developer AcQuest Group, Raleigh-based CityPlat, and Lansing Melbourne Group of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The town unveiled its solicitation for the development partner proposal for the site in October, seeking companies interested in developing a new mixed-use site up to 4 stories tall on 0.3 acres at the corner of West Main and Purvis Street. AcQuest Group's proposal calls for 7,350 square feet of retail space and 26 condos across 4 stories from tabletop parking as requested by the town. Plans also call for a closed pedestrian street on Purvis Street with removable bollards. CityPlat. Raleigh-based CityPlat's proposal, the largest of the 3, has 12,000 to 17,000 square feet of ground floor retail with 48 to 52 apartments across 4 stories plus a tabletop parking deck. And Lansing Melbourne Group, LMG's proposal, a plan with 3 stories, calls for 6,000 square feet of retail space and 50 residential units with elevated parking space. A revamp for part of Henderson. An ambitious project to transform a historic tobacco warehouse in Henderson is looking to revitalize a long-neglected neighborhood with plans for new commercial, medical, and event space. Work is expected to begin this summer on the Henderson Tobacco Warehouse, with developer AcQuest Group of Maryland planning to transform the aging property into 60,000 square feet of new commercial mixed-use space. And finally, investments rebounded in Q4. Investments in real estate wrapped up a strong 2020 last year, despite a pandemic that saw transactions plummet in the second quarter. Although 2020 saw $5.7 billion in Triangle real estate activity, just a 4% dip from 2019's numbers, according to real estate brokerage firm Avison Young. Now we turn in the Triangle Business Journal to On Retail and Restaurants, written by Erica Wells. Bond Brothers branch out. Bond Brothers reveals new taproom plans with live music and art. A pair of brothers are closer than ever to fulfilling their dream of expanding their popular craft brewery in Cary. Over 2 years ago, twins Jay and Jeremy Bond set their sights on opening their second Bond Brothers location at 602 East Chatham Street. Now they plan to open April 17 after an overhaul of the property and a few setbacks because of the pandemic. The brothers will use the new space called Bond Brothers East Side as a more intimate setting with live music and art, and of course their popular beer selections. The new site is less than a mile away from the original location, which they call Bond Brothers West Side, on East Cedar Street in the heart of downtown Cary. First and foremost, it's a tap room where we'll showcase Bond beer and that you won't be able to get at our other location, Jay Bond said about the East Side operation. Second, it's going to showcase local and national music. We'll have an open mic night on Wednesday, jazz on Thursday, and Friday and Saturday will be fair game for who we book. Music is something that we always wanted to have, but it didn't fit the vibe of our other location. Durham-based Bulkoji Food Truck will be a regular staple at the new location. The brothers opened the first location in 2016 with their head brewer, Whit Baker. It has more than 9,000 square feet of space, including ample outdoor seating, and has become a destination in downtown Cary for friends and families to gather. The company would eventually seek out a new space for offices to build a larger cooler and to expand distribution and its barrel program. The brothers decided on the approximately 1,500 square foot space on East Chatham Street because they wanted to stay within the town. Initially, they planned to invest about $30,000 to $40,000, but more than doubled the amount after revamping everything following the onset of the pandemic last spring. Raleigh Dog Bar lets pet owners off the leash. A full-service grooming and boarding spot for canines, where their owners can grab a drink, is coming to downtown Raleigh. West Street Dog is set to open in the condo building at 400 Northwest Street near Kane Realty's Smoky Hollow in late summer. The venture comes as residents move into the area and bring their furry friends, and also as pet ownership has increased during the pandemic. North Carolina craft beers and limited offerings of spirits and wine will be available. Our focal point is making it a great place for dogs, and then second, we want it to be a space for the community as we resume to normalcy in the coming months, says partner Gray Littlewood. You can drop your dog off for daycare or stay and grab coffee and connect to Wi-Fi. Once daycare ends on weekdays or on weekends, the interior will convert to an off-leash social place for dogs and their owners with a full bar. Littlewood is working with pet hospitality business owner Ben Apart with Go Dog out of North Carolina and Tennessee, and Tom Rhodes Jr. with Raleigh-based Sweet Paws Pet Resort and Spa. They form West Street Dog Holdings and have combined 20 years of experience, says Littlewood, who also is a commercial real estate attorney in Raleigh. The group acquired the approximately 7,000 square foot space for $3.14 million in December from real estate firm Oval Park SPV 400 West, Oval Park Capital. West Street Dog will accommodate 60 dogs in daycare and 60 in boarding with sanitary protocols, odor control, and live dog monitors that are accessible through an app. We really foresee an opportunity in the market to provide this service to the community here because our businesses elsewhere are doing really well, Littlewood says. We're excited about what will be the first of its kind in Raleigh. Over 11 million homes in the U.S. have added a pet during the pandemic, according to the American Pet Products Association. Well before the onset of the coronavirus in 2017, consumers across the country spent $69.51 billion on their pets, including $6 billion for boarding and grooming, according to reports. Michigan firm buys into Holly Springs Shopping Center. Michigan-based real estate company Agree Limited Partnership has scooped up outparcel lots at Holly Springs Town Center along Highway 55 from Kite Realty Group in separate sales that totaled more than $11 million, according to Wake County deed records. Kite Realty is based in Indianapolis but has offices throughout the country, including in Cary. Agree Limited took over 7.8 acres in total at the retail center, which was completed in 2013 and has over 370,000 square feet of leasing space. Food hub based in Carrboro will continue on. For a year now, a local food hub has been a driving force, helping restaurants in Chapel Hill and Carrboro keep their doors open while feeding the community amid the pandemic. Carrboro United has poured over $1 million into the local economy by buying food from nearby restaurants and food providers and making it available to the community through its website. And finally, we have a big number, $47 billion. That's the amount of sales of boats and marine products and services in the U.S. in 2020 alone, according to a National Marine Manufacturers Association report. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Business page written by David Pertell. Triangle lauded as a science hub. The market ranks ahead of cities like Tokyo, Paris, in recent Savills ranking. What does the Triangle have in common with global cities such as New York, Paris, and Beijing? It joins them among the top regions in the world for life sciences. Global real estate services company Savills put the Research Triangle at number 8 in its 2021 list of the world's top 20 science cities. The report ranks the cities and regions that are leading advances in life sciences and notes the spotlight that has been on the sector during the last year amid the global coronavirus pandemic and the drive for treatments and vaccines. Though attention has grown in recent months, the sector has been driving innovation and discovery for decades. Record funding has flowed into the sector, with venture capital into life sciences rising by 69% last year, the report says. The Triangle is the 6th highest-ranked U.S. metro on the list. Ahead of it are Philadelphia, New York, San Diego, Seattle, San Francisco, and Boston, which tops the ranking. Other cities on the list include Dublin, Ireland, Singapore, Sydney, Australia, Oxford and Cambridge in the United Kingdom, Tokyo, and Mainz in Germany. The report notes that almost 600 life sciences companies operate in the Triangle, boosted by the area's research schools of Duke University, NC State University, and UNC Chapel Hill, contributing nearly $10 billion to the regional economy. The report highlights the growing demand for workers in the life sciences industry, as well as the challenges that real estate developers face in supplying the lab, R&D, and office space to the fast-growing sector. The report says venture capital investment in life sciences grew by 200% in the past 5 years to $54 billion in 2020. This has opened the sector up to new entrants and supercharged growth, the report says, noting the United States remains the dominant player in the field. For the Triangle, the region ranked 10th in terms of average scientist salary at $63,000, while Basel, Switzerland was first at $112,000. And when it comes to the cost of leasing lab space, the Triangle was near the bottom of the list at $22 per square foot. And finally, Cooper eases restrictions on bars, restaurants. Restaurants, bars, and retail stores in North Carolina can take a big step closer to normalcy as Governor Roy Cooper is once again easing restrictions on how businesses can operate. Cooper announced March 23 that restaurants, breweries, wineries, and gyms can increase indoor capacity limits to 75%, up from 50%, and outdoor capacity to 100%. Also, bars and event venues such as conference centers and sports arenas will be allowed to operate at 50% of indoor and outdoor capacity, and the 11 p.m. cutoff for alcohol sales will end. Bars, one of the hardest hit industries under Cooper's restrictions, have been allowed to operate at 30% of indoor capacity since the end of February. The statewide face mask requirement remains in place, along with rules regarding social distancing in businesses and public places. Cooper's latest executive order went into effect March 26 at 5 p.m. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. Google Fujifilm can transform local DEI talks. March 18, 2021 was quite a day for our area. First thing in the morning, tech giant Google announced Durham will be hosting an engineering hub that could ultimately create some 1,000 high-paying tech jobs for the area. Google's announcement was part of CEO Sundar Pichai's global announcement that the company is making a $7 billion investment in the U.S. that will create at least 10,000 new jobs in 2021. However, that pledge was a drop from last year, pre-pandemic, when Pichai said the company would make a $10 billion investment. Not to be outdone, Japanese conglomerate Fujifilm Diosynth announced it is picking a site in Holly Springs for its $1.5 billion manufacturing facility that will create 725 jobs when the plant is up and running. Fujifilm coordinated with local and state economic development officials to receive tax breaks and credits on the project. Google chose not to ask the state for any sort of incentives. Google's parent company, Alphabet, has about $117 billion in cash on its books as of the last quarter. Both announcements are amazing. It is so good for the community as it will house new companies and expansion projects that would attract new talent and a slew of support industries, eventually creating its own ecosystem of new business. What was sad, however, was no one really was talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, issues facing our communities and our nation. I saw so many amazing tweets and LinkedIn posts welcoming Google and Fujifilm by some of our noted business leaders, and yet it looked like they were more interested in getting likes and thumbs ups than actually playing important roles in the conversation. Don't get me wrong. Our leaders are aware of DEI issues. I've seen their tweets and posts before on the subject, but this time they missed an opportunity. If people in position of influence really believe that companies, executives, politicians, and workers need to fundamentally change their thinking and act intentionally, our social media and other engagements about these projects should have stressed the importance of DEI and how Google and Fujifilm can be leaders in our community. For its part, Google has been very vocal in reiterating its position regarding racial justice. The company is on the record stating 2020 was its biggest year for hiring Black and Latinx employees in the U.S. Additionally, the company already has committed billions in various initiatives to promote social causes. For Fujifilm, in making the announcement, company president Kenji Sakano said, "Fujifilm will contribute to realizing a sustainable society by collaborating with the Holly Springs community and stimulating the local economy, and further, by accelerating resolving social issues through business activities in alignment with its Sustainable Value Plan 2030. And we'll stop there as the column goes on to mention that leaders of the large companies seem to understand the need to mention diversity. But there's a question of whether our community leaders understand these same needs. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.